Coming up on this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast, we pick up where the last episode left off as Carl and Jason discuss Anakin Skywalker's path to redemption in The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. Afterwards, we get excited about the brand new Rebels trailer. So sit back, relax, and watch out for Wampas. Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, have been frozen upside down to the cave ceiling with nothing to do but talk all things Star Wars. So make yourselves comfortable, but keep a wary eye out for trouble here in the Wampa's Lair. Hey everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 94, My Father Before Me. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me we have the Chief Chirpa to my Newt Gunray. We have Carl LeClaire.
Oh, yay. I love being an Ewok. There's nothing better than walking with an Ewok. It's a song. Unreleased by the Max Rebo Band. Another one of them.
Yes. Yes, well, I don't believe I have heard that one.
I can't do any Chief Chirpa, I'm sorry. But I do like the name Chirpa. Wouldn't that be a fun name to name your child someday? This is my son, Chirpa LeClaire. That poor kid. Oh, man. I hope he's furry and pudgy. Oh, boy. Jason, we are inching ever closer to episode 100.
We are.
And, you know, people are going to get blown away because at the end of episode 99, we have a surprise. We've been planning this since, like, episode 81.
So yeah.
Maybe earlier. We just, oh, my gosh.
Quite possible.
You know, I think we should just record like 5 episodes this week, all like 10 minutes each, just to get them, just so we get up to 100.
Something to think about.
Yes. Yes, of course. As you know, our blockade is perfectly legal. Hundred be half out of ambassadors.
That was my take on Newt Gunray.
That just got crazier and crazier.
Newt Gunray. Do your chef guy.
That's me, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Jason and I tonight are going to be talking kind of like a part two of what we did in the last episode. We talked about some of those key scenes and between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith that kind of point to Anakin's fall to becoming Darth Vader. Well, today we thought it'd be fun to just kind of follow up again with some key scenes from the original trilogy, in which we see kind of Anakin Skywalker starting to emerge back out of Darth Vader. So, well, you know, you can't just talk about the fall from grace and not redemption. We got to follow up with redemption. We are an Easter people, am I right?
Oh, yes, exactly.
But before we get there,
yes,
we had a poll sort of circulating out there for quite a while now. Uh-huh. So I think it's high time we get this taken care of.
Exactly.
So,
yes,
this poll, for those of you that may not remember, is your favorite Star Wars soundtrack, and this is the soundtrack as a complete whole, which movie or what video game or whatever that you think is your favorite. Whoops, my microphone almost fell off onto the floor.
Jason just used the force to pull it back, people. I saw it.
Yes, I did. So, we have a clear winner, and the rest of it is pretty close, so I will go ahead and get started. In last place, with one vote, is The Clone Wars. The Clone Wars did get a vote. In second place with two, or second place, sixth place with two votes is Attack of the Clones. And then in fifth place with three votes, Return of the Jedi.
fourth place with 4 votes. That's kind of convenient.
Yeah.
Oh, hold on, Carl.
What?
I made a mistake.
Uh-oh, what happened?
I didn't get your...
I'll type it to you right now.
Your favorite. Uh-oh, can you just send it to me in the chat real quick?
I just did.
Okay, that...
Do you see it?
Thankfully, yes, thankfully yours and mine do not contradict or change anything in the bottom.
I didn't think they would, so...
So, fourth place with 4 votes is A New Hope.
Oh, how fitting.
And, yes, it was, I thought. In third place with 6 votes is Revenge of the Sith. In second place with 7 votes, and this is where my vote went, is The Phantom Menace. So The Phantom Menace got second place as far as soundtracks go. And, of course, first place with 12 votes is The Empire Strikes Back.
Of course.
So it was pretty close there except for first place. So there was 5 votes between first and second, and then it just sort of stepped down from there.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I was, at first I was a little surprised that Empire Strikes Back was so high, but then I thought, well, wait, what's in Empire Strikes Back? Well, you got the Imperial March, you got Yoda's theme and all that fun stuff, and there's like great stuff in there. Yeah. So I was like, well, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. And the asteroid field, you know, that's such a fun number.
And of course the Battle of Hoth.
Yeah. And I think, the Phantom Menace soundtrack is awesome and I'm happy that's in second place. To me, I personally, I think tied for second would be Phantom Menace and Return of the Jedi. And I think if I liked Phantom Menace more as a movie, and I'm not saying, again, I don't hate Phantom Menace, but it's not, obviously not my favorite Star Wars movie. But if like Phantom Menace was like my second or third favorite Star Wars film, that soundtrack would probably be almost tied with Empire because it is such a beautiful soundtrack.
It really is. And I was really close between this one and Return of the Jedi as for which one was my favorite. But considering that the Phantom Menace soundtrack is the soundtrack that got me interested in Star Wars music and orchestral music in general, I had to make it the top, top favorite soundtrack. So, overall.
It has, you have Duel of the Fates. I love it. Anakin's theme is one of my favorite songs. Not to mention, like, the, basically, like, the Imperial March, but the Trade Federation March, I guess you'd call it. You know, that march is used throughout the rest of the PT. So, you know, whereas like A New Hope, a lot of the themes from A New Hope are not drawn upon again, except for like the Force theme.
Force theme and Leia's theme.
Right. But like with the PT, so both episodes 2 and 3 draw heavily from Phantom Menace.
Exactly. The Phantom Menace sort of like set the tone for what the music would be. For the prequel trilogy.
Yeah.
And it did it very well.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously all these soundtracks are phenomenal. I think for like, if you're going like individual hits, some of my favorite hits actually come from the Revenge of the Sith soundtrack, but taken as a whole. Mm-hmm. And that is, again, that was kind of the purpose of the poll is taken as a whole. The Empire Strikes Back soundtrack just sounds the best. And you know, Jason, I think I've mentioned this on the show. I don't know if I know I've mentioned it to you personally, but I really wish so much that they would come out with an Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith like ultimate edition soundtrack because we still specifically for me anyway, Revenge of the Sith. There's so much awesome music going on in the background that we don't have.
Exactly.
And the one scene I always think of is the scene when Obi-Wan gives Anakin the assignment to spy on the Chancellor. The music in the background of that scene, if you've never paid attention to it, I encourage you to go back and watch that scene and just kind of turn your volume up a bit and pay attention to the music. It's so good. It's really haunting and kind of almost creepy and eerie. It's like the perfect music for that scene. Oh, I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally agree. And for me, the Attack of the Clones is one that I would really like to see because...
Uh-oh, did your microphone fall?
It fell down. I fix now. That's probably a lot of annoying noises.
All right, well, I will continue to talk while you make sure your microphone is set up.
Okay.
But Attack of the Clones, while it draws heavily from the Phantom Menace, especially in some of the battle sequences, it sort of rearranges some of the music and puts it in new ways and adds some of the themes from Attack of the Clones into it. And we don't have any of that music, really. Yeah. So,
yep.
So I would love to get a complete Attack of the Clones soundtrack and complete Revenge of the Sith soundtrack as well, because we have it for all six other or the four other movies.
Yep.
So, Lucasfilm, you better get on that.
Come on, Disney.
Because there are people
out
there like us that will buy it.
Yes, I'll buy it. Will you buy it?
I will definitely buy it.
I know, and I just asked Embo, my cat. He said he'd buy it. He's a cat.
Oh,
you know, he doesn't have any money.
Yes, right. He will pay in catnip.
Will Pebbles buy it?
Pebbles would probably buy it. It would be like an epic soundtrack in her head as she's hunting lizards.
Ooh, cool. Embo's been hunting flies lately. I don't know how flies keep getting into my apartment, and Embo's like on a mission to kill them all. Well, I want him to come up to me some night and in a completely human voice just go, "I killed them. I killed them all." That would terrify me. And then he just goes back to meow. What just happened?
I killed them. I killed them all.
Excuse me? What was in my Cheetos? Oh, man.
Although that's a fitting line for a cat to say.
I know it, yeah, because they are like crazy little butt nugs sometimes. So,
but anywho.
Anyway, yeah, let's do our topic.
Yes, and we'll have a matchup for you guys at the end of this episode, so never fear.
Yes.
But, topic. We have a topic.
We have a topic.
We have a topic.
We have a
and
topic.
We sort of introduced it here at the beginning of the show, but... obviously, we wanted to pick up where we left off with the saga of Anakin / Vader. We highlighted his fall last episode. So we wanted to continue that along with Vader's redemption, or Anakin's redemption,
yes.
If you will.
Yeah.
So where is the first... Well, inkling that something is going on.
And here's something. I'm going to bring this up right off the bat because it's kind of a precursor to the actual discussion. And I was thinking about this, and I want to get your two cents on it because you're a smart guy. How the hell does Vader find out exactly that Luke Skywalker is his son? Because if you think about it, at the end of A New Hope, when he's chasing him down the trench run there, the Force is strong with this one, but he doesn't. There's no recognition that he is in any way related to this person. But then, right at the start of Empire, like even in the opening crawl, it says like Vader's obsessed with finding Luke, and that's clearly what he's doing. He's basically on a personal manhunt, and it's like, well, why? Like somewhere in between episodes 4 and 5, I wonder if it's like he finds out for sure. Like he hears who it was that blew up the Death Star, and it kind of just clicks. Like, holy crap, that must be my son. Right? Because to me, like, well, that's something that's never explicitly explored.
The thing is I'm sure Imperial Intelligence has figured out the name of this rebel hero. And this kid is almost solely responsible for the destruction of the Empire's ultimate weapon, this weapon that was going to ensure their complete dominance for the foreseeable future. And as soon as it's, the champagne bottle's been smashed on it, it's been sent out to sea, so to speak, it's blown up, it's sunk in the harbor, basically, to use a ship metaphor. But so obviously this kid is a huge boost for the rebels. The rebels now have someone to latch on to and someone to win people that are on the fence over, and so it makes sense that the Empire would want to have, want to find out who this kid is and want to have him gotten rid of and taken care of. And so whether or not Vader recognized the Skywalker name and went, oh, that's someone that's related to me, or if he just saw Skywalker and was like, this is the rebel that destroyed the Death Star. He's strong in the Force, and we need to stop him before things get worse. I don't know. Because I can't imagine that that's the only Skywalker family in the galaxy.
Yeah, for all we know, Skywalker is the Smith of the Star Wars galaxy, right?
Exactly,
To some degree, that could be true, too, because, I mean, there is a backward planet, you know, where they come from. That's a good point, though.
But the thing is he obviously knows there's something about this kid.
Yeah.
Whether or not he knows for sure, I don't know.
And maybe that's why he's trying to find out. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure he at least suspects something.
Hey.
Because then in Empire Strikes Back, when he's talking to Palpatine, Palpatine says, I have no doubt that this rebel is the offspring of Anakin Skywalker. You know.
How is that possible?
Yes. So, and he says, how is that possible? And so,
Jason.
Either Vader is being really coy.
Jason?
Huh?
I think you should do Darth Vader's line, how is it possible, as the chef. If you can. Let's put you on the spot.
How would I do that? Let's see.
Okay, thank you. Sorry to interrupt.
No problem. So either Vader is being really coy and trying to not let on that he already knows or suspects that this rebel is his son or related to him, or he's caught off guard, or his worst fear has been realized or something. You know, I don't know. I don't know if Vader's trying to play the Emperor here.
Oh, that's it.
Or if he's genuinely shocked.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, then his suspicions are up when we open Empire because, you know, that's it. The rebels are there, and I'm sure Skywalker is with them. Like, he's obviously got something out for Luke. He wants to find out more. And maybe it is. Maybe he wants to get close so that he can feel him in the Force. I always used to crack up when I was a little boy because, you know, when the Emperor in Return of the Jedi says, you know, are you sure about this? You know, when he talks about, like, the rebels landing on the man, I have felt him. It's like, you felt him. Sorry. Grow up, Carl. I mean, so at the beginning of Empire, Vader obviously wants to find Luke. And then the real first inkling we get of this, like you said, you know, is that conversation that he has with the Emperor. And I think, you know, that's a good point you bring up is, like, maybe he is just kind of playing coy there. You know, like, how is that possible? Is this really true? You know, maybe he's just playing coy so that the Emperor doesn't ask too much about it. But it's clear that he's definitely going to invest some energy into that. And I think, you know, I have no doubt this is the offspring of Anakin Skywalker. That's quite possibly the first time he's heard Anakin Skywalker's name in a long time, right? Like, he doesn't refer to himself as that. I'm sure the Emperor doesn't go like, hey, little Annie. Go grab my repulsor chair.
And the thing is, Palpatine is referring to Anakin Skywalker as if he's a completely different person.
Yeah, it's not like your son. He says he's the offspring of Anakin Skywalker. I mean, it's such detached language. Like, this isn't he's not part of you, you know?
Right. He's part of this dead person.
Yeah.
You know, Anakin is dead, and this is the last remnants of this person's legacy, so to speak. And if that is revealed to the galaxy, then, well, that's even more in favor for Luke. You know, Luke's got even more going for him in the realm of public opinion, because Anakin was a hero during the Clone Wars. So, but obviously Palpatine wants him dead.
Right.
Right there. And Vader, for some reason or another, decides to suggest that they should turn him to the dark side.
Mm-hmm.
And whether he's just buying time. And because this is the weird thing. Vader has to know. If Palpatine gets his hands on Luke, Palpatine will groom Luke to replace him.
Yeah.
To replace Vader.
Yep.
Vader has to know that. So either Vader is already got this idea that he wants Luke to for himself in order to overthrow the Emperor, or he's just really confused about how he wants to approach this kid and he's buying time.
Yeah.
So,
you know,
I suspect it's probably the former. A little bit more so, yeah. But it's probably a bit of both.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I think at this point, especially in that scene, I don't think I don't think there's any part of Anakin that's rising up out of like compassion for his son. I think he thinks, like you said, you know, if the Emperor gets his hands on him, he's going to get replaced. And even more than that, you know, he's still part of. He's a Sith. He lives by the rule of two. I mean, to him, it's like. Oh yeah, we can get Luke to join us. Now, it make it seem like it's going to be a trifecta, but that's not how it works with the Sith. So maybe, you know, Vader, I think here too, is also thinking, I can groom him to be my apprentice and, you know, we can take control.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, if we can move forward, are you good with that one?
Yeah.
Okay, you know, and then obviously pushing to the end of The Empire Strikes Back when, you know, he reveals to Luke that he is indeed his father. He invites Luke to join him, to learn from him, to become his apprentice, and, you know, I'll complete your training and we can rule the galaxy as father and son. I mean, this is indicative to what Anakin said to Padme at the end of Revenge of the Sith. Again, it's the Sith mentality. He's become so ingrained in the Sith mentality that he wants Luke to become his apprentice, not his son, his apprentice. You know, I don't think at this point there's a whole lot of human relationship building that Vader's trying to do, because he's still very much Darth Vader here. I don't think there's really any of Anakin quite yet. You know, maybe in the sense of he doesn't destroy him when he could have. But I think really here what's still going on is his mind is still warped by the Sith mentality that Luke is the means to the destruction of the Emperor and therefore him gaining more power.
Right.
Because think about it. I mean, even looking at the end of Revenge of the Sith, Anakin became very power driven. You know, like, you underestimate my power. Love won't save you. Only my new powers can. Like, everything is about power. So
right.
Obviously, it's going to be even more so 20 years later after being encased in this suit that is Darth Vader. His obsession is power. It's not relationship with Luke at this point. And I think, you know, to some degree, I think he realizes that. You know, there's a potential for a relationship here with somebody for the first time in 20 odd years. But he's still very ingrained in that Sith mentality.
Yeah. No, I agree. And he's using this, you know, we could rule the galaxy as father and son line more as a manipulation tool against Luke than anything that he himself wants at this point. But at the same time, he's using this, you know, relationship picture, and something of that seems to stick in the back of his head. You know, father and son, there could be a relationship here. You know, that's a relationship statement, father and son. It's not like, you know, a title, you know, major and captain. You know, he's using a relationship comparison there. And something of that has to be sticking in the back of his head for the type of reaction we get at the very, very end of the movie.
True.
But in this case, at this point with Luke dangling, you know, handless off the vein there, whatever it is, he's using this as a manipulation tool against Luke.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, because Luke wants a father figure.
Right. Right, and I think he's smart enough to know that, you know?
Yeah, that is a very sensitive subject.
I don't think he was thinking this.
What is this?
Oh, you know this. I don't think that's what he was thinking.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Anyway, sorry. I just really wanted to slip that in. I love having a mixer.
You love this mixer deal, don't you?
I really do.
But yeah, no. But then, of course, Luke defies him. Luke doesn't take the bait the way that Anakin did.
Yeah.
And Luke would rather kill himself than join. And he defies Vader and, you know, manages to survive. And so Vader is chasing after him in his Super Star Destroyer while Luke's in the Millennium Falcon. And we get this... the only other time that this sort of scene is used where they're communicating across distance is in Revenge of the Sith, where Anakin is in the Jedi Temple.
Oh, yeah.
And Palpatine.
Yep.
Talks to him. But, you know, if they kill me, there'll be no way.
Although Luke does it with Leia in Empire 2.
Well, that's true.
But not quite as clearly. Like, there's not a... Leia's not capable of responding.
Right, not
like through the Force anyway. I mean, she's capable of responding in the sense if she goes back, but she's not able to say like, "Okay, I'm coming."
Right, right. But they have this weird conversation across distance. You know, Luke, father, son, come with me. And you know, Ben, why didn't you tell me? You know, it's weird because Vader is still trying to play off this thing in order to get Luke to join him, but. It seems less manipulative.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure, you know. What do you think?
I think so, too. I think there is a sense of a little bit of endearment, you know, like, son, come with me. You know, like, there is he switches to that language of relationality. He's not just calling him Luke at this point. He's calling him son. And I think that makes a difference. And what's going on in Vader's head is, I don't know, like almost like Luke throwing himself down that chasm in Cloud City. And again, if we go with the original line from the movie, "Bring my shuttle," you know, that pissed off Darth Vader. He's pissed off, and he's not just pissed off because you know, Luke defied him, but I think he's pissed off because it's like, crap, I had something there. Had some right. Something. He doesn't know probably exactly what. He probably hasn't had an emotional feeling in a long time. He's very dead inside, but something shook him up there. And Luke defying him, I think, helps him recognize to some degree that if his son can be this good, maybe he can. There's some sort of goodness in him, you know. And I think, and look at Vader's reaction. Mm-hmm. You know, after the rebels get away, he doesn't kill Piet. We've seen him kill, you know, two officers so far for making mistakes. He doesn't kill Piet. And I think the reason for that is to some degree, Luke has shooken him up enough that he's just so caught up in that he doesn't even take the time to get angry at that, if that makes sense.
He's so distracted. He is so completely distracted. By what is going on here, because it not only is Luke, you know, did he have Luke in his grasp and Luke escaped, but Luke defied the very offer that ended up, you know, costing Anakin his humanity. But it's sort of awakening these weird human feelings within Vader. And so he's so completely distracted by the fact that all that's going on that he doesn't – he almost doesn't seem to even register that his crew failed.
Yeah.
You know, that Piet failed him, you know, like he would have said if anybody else had done it earlier in the movie. You know, so – which is weird because he sort of like has this sort of – sort of takes a step back from the window, looks back outside, yeah. And then walks down the bridge back to, I guess, his quarters or wherever, and doesn't say a word.
Mm-hmm.
It's really odd, and that's where we leave Vader at the end of Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, it's a much different Vader that we met at the start of the Empire Strikes Back.
You know like, there was
it's,
yeah. a human emotion
yeah.
happened. And he doesn't know what to do with it.
Right. And there's so much, you know, and this is where, again, David Prowse can be praised for the way his body language acts and says things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that double take out the window when he looks away and then he looks back, almost as if, I don't know, it's almost like, you know, you can think of it like, crap, is he really gone, right? Like, there's this sense of loss to some degree for Vader there.
Yeah.
And I think that's the attachment that Anakin has to his son. And I think when Vader feels that, it just catches him completely off guard. He's not used to having these types of feelings.
Right. Oh, and I just had a thought. There's an art print out there that's got Vader in his hyperbaric chamber, you know, whatever, with his helmet off, mm-hmm. sitting on the floor by his feet, and there's like a superimposed image of Padme in her wedding dress, you know, above his head. Like, that's what he's thinking of. He's got his head in his hand, his helmet's on the floor, and he's, you know, like, he's thinking about Padme, and it's like, you know, I almost could see him going and doing that right after this scene.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's going to conjure up, like, where did Luke come from? Oh, his beloved wife, you know what I mean?
Exactly, and, you know, she gave birth before she died, but I killed her, you know, that was what...
I couldn't, I felt her.
Right. So that's going to bring up all sorts of emotions and thoughts and feelings, you know, of animosity towards Palpatine now, because apparently he lied somehow.
Yeah.
Or twisted the truth, at least, which is nothing new to Palpatine, but there you have it. But that's sort of the mental state we leave Vader in at the end of Empire Strikes Back.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as Palpatine gets to the Death Star and Return of the Jedi, you know, he's there to ensure that the Death Star gets completed on schedule, and the Emperor shows up and he turns to Vader and says, "And now I sense you wish to continue your search for young Skywalker."
Yes, my master.
This has obviously been just taken over as an obsession since then, since The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
So,
and I think it's because he, in a very, very literal way, he's found something to live for.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Not necessarily in a romantic sense. Like, oh, this is my son. I can't wait to see him again. It's not like this necessarily this desire for a happy reunion, but he does have a purpose.
And exactly.
Even if that purpose is simply to get Luke to turn to the dark side and overthrow the Emperor, he has a purpose that he did not have for the past two decades.
Right.
And I think we see a much different Vader. I mean, think of it. Like, literally, in A New Hope, Darth Vader is just a menacing bad guy. There is no humanity to him. He's, for all we know, he is just a machine. Right? Like, there is no humanity to him. But by the start of, you know, by the end of Empire and pretty much all of Jedi, he has some sort of human motivation. And again, that any sort of humanness that's coming out of Darth Vader can only come from Anakin. Because Darth Vader is just a creation. Darth Vader is not real, in a sense, I would say. He's merely a defense mechanism against pain and loss. Right. And Luke is bringing out the humanity in Darth Vader, and that humanity belongs to Anakin. And we, you know, especially in that scene, like, he's very quiet with the Emperor too, right? Like, he doesn't, he's not oversharing, obviously, his feelings, or he's not oversharing some of his plans on what he wants to do with Luke. He's keeping it very short. Like, oh, you want to go find Luke, don't you? Yep. Well, don't worry. He's going to come to you. Okay. Like, it's just, he's just very short and curt with it. But you know that in his head right now, there's all sorts of machinations going on. And, you know, he has this purpose driving him forward now.
Right. Right. And this purpose is twofold. You know, it's a purpose both for Vader in order to, you know, gain an ally against the Emperor. And it's a purpose for that spark of Anakin that's buried deep down inside, this desire for relationship, desire for some sort of humanity again. So both parts of Anakin, Vader, want Luke, need Luke, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it's turned into an obsession, and obviously he's been taken off of that obsession in order to ensure the Death Star being built. But of course, Luke does end up coming. So,
you know what I just thought of?
What did you just think of?
You know, in a sense, in Revenge of the Sith, Darth or Anakin is obsessed with finding a power to save Padme, right? Like that drive to saving Padme, that obsession kind of leads to his downfall. But here we see him obsessed with something else, right? But it's a different sort of attachment. So I guess I'm just pointing this out because, again, we see a very obsessive Vader in Return of the Jedi and a very obsessive Anakin in Revenge of the Sith. And it's funny how those obsessions play out.
Right.
Because in a sense, Padme doesn't really stand up to Anakin to an extent. And, I mean, what little bit she does, he chokes her out. But Luke does. Luke stands up to him in a sense. And because of him standing up to him, he's able to undo everything.
Right.
So I don't know. I guess I just point that out to, again, mirror the fact that Anakin / Vader are very obsessive people.
yes. You know,
when they have something to focus on, he puts his whole energy into it.
Exactly. So,
man, he'd probably be really good at making a Lego set. Anakin, put that away. No. And he force chokes you.
Of course, you could just use the force and all the bricks with, you know, yeah. Like in the Lego video games.
But I was going to Toys R Us to pick up a new power converter.
Yes. Oh, man. But that's awesome. Yeah, but that's sort of a continuity of a personality.
Yeah,
between Anakin and Vader.
There's that similar personality trait. So again, in a sense, that's almost part of Anakin too. That kind of obsessiveness is, you know, that's there in a way it hasn't been in, you know, Empire or A New Hope. So
and in a sense, in Return of the Jedi, that obsessiveness gets returned by Luke, because Luke is a little obsessive.
Yeah.
In trying to reach out and redeem Vader, redeem Anakin.
Yeah.
And there's these two parts of Vader Anakin that are obsessive. There's the obsessive part that wants to catch him in order to defeat the Emperor, and then there's the obsessive part that isn't exactly sure what he wants, but he wants relationship or something with Luke.
Yeah.
So that's conflicting within Vader, and then there's Luke being obsessive and trying to redeem Anakin, and this is just a mess for Vader mentally and emotionally, as we see later on. But before we get to the scene on the walkway between the two of them, I want to just bring up briefly when Vader goes to the Emperor and tells him that the rebel force has landed on Endor is... Luke is there with him.
I felt him.
Yes, exactly. You know, my son is with them. Are you sure?
I felt him.
Strange that I have not. I wonder if your feelings on this matter are clear, Lord Vader.
They are clear, my master.
Then you must go to the sanctuary moon and wait for him.
He will come to me?
I have foreseen it. His compassion for you will be his undoing. He will come to you, and then you will bring him before me.
Okie day.
But and I always thought it was weird that Palpatine didn't sense Luke.
Yeah, that's extremely significant. There, you know, here the Emperor at this point in time is the strongest Force user in the galaxy, and he doesn't detect Luke, who's, you know, miles away, miles away, right? And Vader does. Maybe to some degree, maybe by this point too, like Luke has learned that Force power to kind of cover himself, right? Like there is that Force ability to kind of mask yourself in the Force. We see that played out a lot in a lot of the EU novels. But again, it's almost as if Luke is trying to suppress his presence because he knows Vader is there.
The other thing is, I heard someone give out a theory that Vader was subconsciously hiding Luke from the Emperor.
Ooh.
I don't remember who said that, and I wish I could remember so I could give credit.
It was probably Billy Dee Williams. I mean, it's clearly.
Right, of course. but somebody said gave the theory that Vader might have been the one subconsciously or consciously suppressing Luke's presence around the Emperor. And then, of course, when Vader senses it and Palpatine doesn't. Palpatine immediately, you know, are you sure? I wonder if your feelings on this matter are clear, Lord Vader. There's a veiled threat in there, you know. Yeah. Are you sure you're not trying to do something against me? You know, so there's some definite subtext within those two lines there with Palpatine that he's a little perturbed at his apprentice, at least. So, but that was just something I wanted to bring up, you know. And of course Vader is actively seeking Luke at this point in the Force, so maybe Palpatine wasn't actively seeking Luke, and he was busy ensuring his stranglehold on the galaxy was intact. So maybe that was it. But I like the theory that Vader was suppressing Luke's presence around the Emperor. So,
and that would be so funny, especially without even knowing it, right? Like, if it is this, like, subconscious thing that he's doing, because that would make complete sense. It's almost this, like, you know how they say about, like, mothers, right? Mothers just have this innate ability to protect their children. I think the same, mm-hmm. you know, the same is set, could be said about a father. And, you know, maybe even just subconsciously, Anakin is reaching out to keep his son safe. That's a really cool theory. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, and like I said, I heard it on a podcast, and I wish I could remember which podcast and who said it so I could give proper credit, but unfortunately I can't. I've listened to so many podcasts, and it was a while ago when I heard that. So
it was probably Billy Dee Williams. I'm just being honest.
Maybe
Ahmed Best?
It was a podcaster, not a Star
okay.
Wars.
Oh, okay.
So,
but you know, that's so true, though. I mean, again, that little encounter that he has with the Emperor there, again, showcases that there is some sort of intimate connection between Vader and Luke that is unique from everybody else. And the fact that Luke can sense some goodness in him says something, too, about that intimate connection. Because for all we've really seen of Vader is he's just been a horrible person. You know, he's right. Killed people, he's murdered people, he's tortured people, specifically Han Solo, The Empire Strikes Back, great scene. man, I'm so gross. You know, I mean, Vader has been nothing but a monster, yet Luke is somehow able to see beneath all of that. You know, and even, not to get a little sidetracked, but even when Luke tells Leia, you know, before he goes and surrenders himself, like, that Vader's his father, right after indicating that she's his sister, which obviously, you know, her thought's going to be like, holy crap, that's my father too. When she says, your father, like the look of disgust on her face,
right?
You know, is just like, that's our father. That's disgusting, right? Like he is this monster, this terrible, horrifying monster, and that's our father. And, you know, for Luke to be able to see beneath that really says a lot about his ability to connect to him. And, you know, and that's going to lead us right into the next scene where they confront each other once again.
Yeah. Such a good scene.
It is. I mean, Luke comes right up to him. You know, the Emperor's been expecting you. I know, Father. So you've accepted the truth. You've accepted the truth.
Yes.
You know, I mean, this scene is so great.
I've accepted the truth that you were once Anakin Skywalker, my father. That name no longer has any meaning for me. You know, it's...
Yeah. And
Luke is not talking to Vader. Luke is talking to Anakin.
Mm-hmm.
And the Vader side is really not happy.
Yeah.
The Vader side is really starting to lose control and doesn't like it.
Yeah. I mean, to throw in a little psychology even here, I mean, that's really what's going on is, again, like I kind of said earlier, Darth Vader is a creation from Anakin to keep him safe from pain and loss and fear. Again, this is why I love the Revenge of the Sith novel. If you read the Revenge of the Sith novel, especially towards the end of the novel, you get inside Anakin's head. It basically says, you know, Darth Vader, I created this person to squash my fear, to try to squash my fear. So Darth Vader is simply his kind of this mental projection, defense mechanism against his fear of loss. And now you have Luke, his own son, saying to him, I know who you really are. You know, Anakin, it's the name of your true self. You've only forgotten. You know, the Darth Vader, of course, he keeps talking about, right? Luke will keep saying, I sense the conflict in you. And there's this conflict of Anakin trying to emerge to listen to the voice of his son. But whenever you do that, whenever you try to pull yourself away from something that's like really limiting you, something that you create for yourself, these defense mechanisms we create for ourselves, they're going to fire back really, really hard. If I can be theological for a moment.
Sure.
If you think about a lot of the stories in the gospel, when Jesus drives demons out of people, the people convulse very, very violently as the demons coming out. And again, it's kind of this imagery of the fact that when we have to pull these demons out of ourselves, when we have to pull this darkness out of ourselves, it doesn't come out just like, oh, okay, I guess I'll leave now. It's something kind of violent and something it's going to resist. You know, it clings to us. Even though we don't want it to. A non-Star Wars film that illustrates that point is, you know, in Spider-Man 3, even though I know a lot of people hate that movie. But the scene when, you know, Peter Parker is like in the bell tower and Venom basically, or the symbiote, whatever it's called, separates itself from him. It's like this kind of this violent, expulsion. And that's really what, you know, Vader is fighting back, trying to suppress Anakin. Like, no, no, no. Like, you know?
Right. It's a very Jekyll and Hyde sort of situation going on within Vader, and one is trying to overcome the other, and the other is not wanting to let that happen. You know, it's I mean, we keep talking about, you know, Vader and Anakin as two different entities, because they are.
Yeah.
And you know, and of course they're warring against each other, because Vader is a Sith.
Yep.
Vader is a Sith. Vader is pure evil. He's a servant of the dark side. He is a servant of Palpatine.
Mm-hmm.
Anakin is an innocent-minded former Jedi who made a mistake and is so distraught and depressed at what he did that for the longest time he hasn't had the energy or the desire to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's a spark. There's a reason to get back up. There's a reason to take control again. And this scene, we really get to see the conflict that's going on within Vader that Luke keeps talking about.
Yeah. I'm going to play this quick little part of the scene to try it. 'Cause again, it's going to illustrate, you know, Luke's going to make, it's kind of a counterpoint to what Vader does. Vader gives him an invitation in Empire. Now Luke's going to give an invitation, and it's really telling to listen to Vader's response. Let me just hit play real quick. Give me one sec.
Come with me.
Obi-Wan once thought as you do. You don't know the power of the dark side. I must obey my master.
I will not turn, and you'll be forced to kill me.
If that is your destiny.
Search your feelings, Father. You can't do this. I feel the conflict within you. Let go of your hate.
It is too late for me, son. The Emperor will show you the true nature of the Force. He is your master now.
Then my father is truly dead.
I think that scene right there is, like, that quick little exchange at the end is really powerful.
Yeah.
Because, you know, come with me, and he says, you know, you don't know the power. To me, that's almost Anakin. I think that's almost to a sense Anakin's response. You don't know the power of the dark side. I have to obey my master. It's so funny too, because this is the sad irony, is he's become a slave again.
Right.
You know, and there's this confession there that he just He can't do it. Anakin at this point just isn't strong enough. And, you know, and Luke, he fires right back. You know, I feel the conflict within you. Let go of that hate. Let go of that dark side. And just, it's too late for me, son. Like, there is...
The interesting thing is at this point where it's just the two of them and Vader is vulnerable, he doesn't contradict that statement. He doesn't say there is no conflict like he does later on in the duel in front of the Emperor.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't say there is no conflict.
Right.
He says, it's too late for me, son.
And there's like, this sadness in his voice, you know, mm-hmm. like almost this, it's really despair, really. He just doesn't see himself as being worth what Luke sees. You know, like, it's too late for me. Mm-hmm. I've damned myself, in a sense. You know what I mean?
And then the following line, the door opens, and suddenly the Emperor will show you the true nature of the dark side. And that's Vader again. It's very back on top of it.
He's asserting himself in front of his troops, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I love
that. Mm-hmm. And then I love it when Luke says that my father is truly dead. And they take him off, and Vader's left out there by himself. And he just goes over and has to lean on the railing and stare out into the forest.
I think it's the best physically acted scene in Star Wars, considering where it's coming from. It's coming from a guy mm-hmm. in a suit with a mask who you can't see any facial expressions, which is right. Like the human body, we express so much just through our facial expressions. Without any face, he conveys so much just with that leaning on the thing. And then if you notice, too, there is that sigh. There's like this... Like, it's not your normal... I mean, it's still the Darth Vader breathing, but it's like a sigh sound. Like, the sense of defeat. You know, he's falling apart on the inside here. He's being torn apart by, you know, the power of Vader trying to suppress him and keep Anakin down. But, you know, that is true, though. Like, my father is truly dead. I think it just hits him right in the heart. Mm-hmm. You know, like, he's calling me on this. He's calling me, and you know, to me, this is the truth scene. You know,
yeah.
Anakin is being presented the truth. Here's who you truly are, and I know that you're still in there, and I know that there's goodness in you. You know, there is this good person buried deep down, and it makes me think of when I was watching some of the commentary for Revenge of the Sith like a few weeks ago, and George Lucas says, you know, like, Anakin is always the chosen one. Even when he becomes Darth Vader, he's still the chosen one. It just gets hidden. And I think that's what Luke has kind of scratched. He's scratched off the surface so that can get some air again. And, you know, he's saying, you're buried down there. You can come out. Come with me. Come back to the light. This is where Luke is trying to do that. This is his first attempt. And, you know, Anakin's just not strong enough yet to come out.
Right. And the thing is just to talk Luke here for just a second, with that line, well, then my father is truly dead. He doesn't believe that. That's more of a challenge. The way he says it, I don't think he actually believes that Anakin is truly dead. Because like you said, I feel the conflict within you, let go of your hate. There is a conflict. There is something going on there. That Luke will keep fighting for. Mm-hmm. And when he says that my father is truly dead, you know, it's got a sense of almost finality, but it's more of a challenge.
Yeah.
He sort of just throws that at Vader, like, that my father is truly dead. Are you okay with that? That's sort of the unwritten line afterwards, you know, my father is truly dead. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, can you live with that?
Yeah, can you live with that? So that's sort of the unsaid end to that line, almost. So, and obviously, Anakin is not okay with that, as the reaction at the end of the scene tells us. So, but.
Yeah.
Shall we move on?
Sure. Yeah. So then, obviously, we get the final act, if you will, and you know, this whole, when Vader brings Luke before the Emperor, he's really just becomes a background character, really. until they start fighting. And in a sense, it's really sad because you see Darth Vader, he's kind of like on a leash, right? Like he's just at the Emperor's side like a good little doggy. And again, it really showcases how enslaved he really is.
He's on a leash watching the Emperor get ready to replace him.
Yeah.
Right in front of him.
Yep.
And Palpatine doesn't care.
Nope. And but I think also too what he's witnessing here is he's witnessing the defiance of his son. He's witnessing the opposite of his own response. Luke is a lot more powerful in a sense than he was, and is, you know, and really shakes him up. And you know, while they start fighting, you know, you brought up that great point when Luke says to him again, you know, I feel the good in you, the conflict. There is no conflict. You know,
he's almost too fast with his response there.
Yeah. And it's almost like he's flexing his muscles for the Emperor, reminding the Emperor, like, hey, don't worry. If I have to kill him, you made a good choice sticking with me, right? Like, yeah. But it really all boils down, I mean, to me, it just boils down to the end of the duel, really, when Luke starts getting electrocuted. I don't know. Is there anything else? Is there anything worth mentioning before that?
Well, the whole sequence with Vader in front of the Emperor is got to be a horrible case of deja vu.
Oh yeah, yeah.
For Anakin,
remember the invisible hand.
Yeah, I mean that. There's, everything that the Emperor is doing to Luke is what Palpatine did to Anakin, although it's more condensed and it's, you know, all done in a much shorter amount of time and much more not rushed, but a less gentle way than what Palpatine did with Anakin over the course of, you know, 10 plus years during the prequels. So he's watching Luke go through the same temptations, the same battle, internal battle that the Emperor put him through when he fell to the dark side. So it's so interesting to see that. And then, of course, Luke at the very end finally makes the final stand and that final call out to his father, you know, I am a Jedi, like my father before me. You know, that this is the final stand for Luke. Luke is defying the Emperor once and for all. The Emperor cannot reach Luke anymore. He cannot tempt Luke anymore. And Luke is in the process of completely defying the Emperor to his face, which blinds the Emperor with rage. Luke is also calling out to Anakin to wake Anakin up, and Palpatine is so blinded with rage towards Luke that he doesn't see it at first.
No, not at all.
He doesn't see it at all.
Yeah, not, yeah. I mean, he's complete, like you said, I mean, and the way that a lot of that scene is shot, it's shot so well too, like the way they film it, they'll zoom in on, it's all faces, right? Like we zoom in on Luke getting electrocuted, then we zoom in on the Emperor's face of rage. He's so focused on just killing Luke, but slowly and painfully, and then it's, you know, focused on Vader, and again, just seeing the reflections of electricity off of his mask. Again, you can't see any of those expressions, but you can see. To me, I almost see like a sad puppy.
Right.
You know, he is feeling so much right here, and the question is who do you want to be loyal to? Who do you choose? Do you choose this son who's thrown his life away for you, potentially trying to remind you that you're a good person, remind you that you have value and worth, or are you going to stick with this horrible person who's literally physically disgusting and is torturing your child? You know, right. I mean, it's again, very biblical. It's very much like when the people of Israel are standing on the banks of the Jordan River and Moses says, you know, shall we cross? Do we choose life or do we stay here and choose death? It's a very black and white decision. for Anakin here, because Anakin has emerged, and it's, you know, Anakin, do you choose to free yourself, or do you choose to continue to be enslaved? And I think his son's example is what ignites him and reminds him that, hey, that goodness came from me. If I can create someone this good, I too must be good.
Right.
Luke's dramatic example.
And of course, as the Emperor's zapping Luke, you know, Luke is calling out to him, you know, Father, please, you know, it's a desperate call from a son to his father. There's no more pretense. There's no more, you know, trying to sway the mind and the heart anymore. This is just, I can't do this. Help me.
Yeah.
You know, and that sends Vader over the edge.
Yeah.
And Anakin rises up.
Yep.
Ugh, it's so good.
It is so good. Yeah. And again, like I was saying, you know, this is kind of the dramatic example part. You know, earlier when they're on Endor and they're having that conversation, again, the words won't suffice. He gives this dramatic example of, this is how much I think you're worth it, that I'm willing to die to prove it, to prove that you have value. Again, this is, for you and I both, Jason, I think this is why we are especially attracted to this story, is because it is, there's just so much of our Christian story in this. Mm-hmm. You know, word alone does not suffice. We need that something to really be a dramatic example. And that's what Luke does by just throwing away the lightsaber and saying, like, nope, this is who I am. I'm a Jedi, just like my father was. Like my father before me, is the title of this episode, it says. And I think as he keeps calling out to his father, Anakin hears him and responds, finally. Finally, yeah. He says, wow, I really must have value. I really must be worth it. And he acts out of that. I think his response is twofold as well. He's responding for Luke and for Anakin. He's making a statement here. He's saying, Luke, I'm going to show you the same love you've shown me. And Anakin, I'm going to show you the love that I haven't shown you for 20 years. And Emperor, I'm going to give you what you deserve. And that's really it. Like that ability to free himself from the Emperor's control is because, again, it's the effect of love. That's really what the truth is in all of this, is Luke's love for the Father. You know, that love shakes out the humanity. It shakes off the dust of Darth Vader, and he's able to become himself once again. He's able to become his true self.
Right. And even in the Blu-ray with the no at the end there, I think it fits.
I've come to like it, actually.
Anakin has had enough.
Yeah.
And he needs that concrete answer in his own heart, in his own head, to get him to act.
Yeah.
And so he's finally had enough.
Yeah.
He's rejecting the dark side and turning back to the light to save his son and to destroy the Emperor.
Right.
And he does it at the cost of his own life.
Yep. Yep. And I think, again, this is something very, very human, is when we create these projections, when we create these monsters and these demons in our own head, to keep us safe from certain things, they never suffice, but they never go away until we have some sort of dramatic encounter with love. It's what kind of shakes off our darkness. You know, and Anakin couldn't have done this on his own. I don't think so. I don't think Anakin could have ever reemerged without Luke. Without love, he could not have been saved. And that's really what's happening here is, you know, when these projections come up, even for ourselves, like what we really need is a dramatic example of love to remind us that we still have value. And that's what we really see happen here, is Luke is a reminder that Anakin has value, and he's valuable to him, and it changes everything.
Exactly. Exactly.
So.
And that is the redemption of Anakin Skywalker. Do you want to say anything else about this?
No, I think we got that pretty good.
I think so too. I think that's the perfect place to leave that.
Oh
so.
Yes.
Good
stuff.
Indeed.
Whew.
Take a little breath after that. But before we wrap this show up, this morning, changing tempo, changing the topic.
Yes.
Dramatically here. This morning, as we were, re-deciding what our topic was going to be, there was this little thing that hit the internet that I guess was sort of interesting.
I'll say. I think it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. But we want to talk about it a little bit. So, Carl, what hit the internet this morning?
Oh, my gosh. That Rebels trailer.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. The 2.5 minute
long Rebels trailer.
It was so good. I'm sure if you're listening to this now, you've probably seen it. If you haven't, go check it out. It's very easy to find.
Yes.
Everything I'd seen, even the other trailers we've seen, like, they were cool. But I was like, okay, I don't know. Like, I'm sure this will be good. But I wasn't that excited. This blew my mind, though. It opens with James Arnold Taylor as Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yes.
As
a hologram.
I mean, it's amazing. Absolutely amazing. I can't wait to see how they get in touch with him. Because to some degree, I hope Obi-Wan doesn't leave Tatooine, because I think that would kind of mess with his character and what he's devoting himself to doing. But if they, go to him or they reach out to him, I can see him responding, but I don't see him going out and actively responding. But what a cool way, though, to start this trailer.
Exactly. Because it seems to me that it's Obi-Wan, this is a recording. Obi-Wan has sent out this recording, and it looks like it's on a holocron or something that Ezra is messing with.
That could have been what he recorded in the temple. In episode 3, right? Like, how he, reverses it, and maybe he recorded something that tells them to stay away.
We'll see. We'll see everything that he's talking about. But it looks like Ezra is the one that runs across this recording. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
And actually, after this trailer, I'm interested to see what they do with Ezra now. Ezra seemed like an interesting character, but nothing spectacular, and I was like, well, I'll probably be, again, more interested in the minor characters and the major characters in this series. But now Ezra's sort of got my attention as, oh, well, what is this kid about?
Yeah.
After this trailer, so...
Yeah, it seems as if he has some force potential or something.
Yeah, I mean, he's got some sort of force ability that he's been using to scrape by as a street kid. Obviously. This is going to be interesting. And I get the idea that this trailer is primarily from the pilot episode, the premiere, the 1 hour special or whatever it is that they're doing to kick off the series. And I get the idea that that's where most of this trailer is coming from. I don't think a lot of this is from subsequent episodes, after the premiere, maybe a couple clips, but most of the story stuff, most of the clips, I think, are going to be from the premiere episodes, the special. But it looks great now. I'm super excited. What specifically jumped out at you aside from Obi-Wan Kenobi?
I don't know. Just how cool it was to have stormtroopers running around. I mean, I love clone troopers. Don't get me wrong. I think they're so cool looking too. But just, it's cool to see that the Empire's in full swing. And I also liked the speeder bikes. Those were straight out of Richard McQuarrie artwork.
Ralph McQuarrie.
Wow. Thank you. Ralph McQuarrie's artwork, I mean, they're really just like recreating his stuff, which is so cool to see. I mean, there's like this fun feel that we had from the Clone Wars added to this original trilogy cartoon. Like, it's just, I don't know, it just looks like such a perfect conglomeration. And I'm really intrigued now. What's that? The other main character's name, the one who is a Jedi?
Kanan.
Kanan?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going to be really intrigued by his story to see, you know, how are Jedi going to respond? Because we know for a fact that obviously not every single Jedi is dead, because there were quite a few. I'm sure some of them escaped Order 66 besides Yoda and Obi-Wan. So how is he going to understand himself as a Jedi now that he can't publicly be a Jedi, right? Like, the Jedi are forced underground. How do they continue to express themselves? I'm really interested to see how his character develops. And obviously, it was just so cool that, I mean, I think it was in the last clip too, but still, that scene where he comes out and he puts his lightsaber together and they say, "Concentrate your fire on that Jedi." Like, it's like, it clearly catches them off guard too, that there hasn't been any Jedi involvement for a number of years.
Right. And so we get the awesome hero shot of him igniting the lightsaber and bracing for the battle. So
exactly. But it's
going to be interesting because his backstory and what we find out about it, because this is 14 years after Revenge of the Sith, and he's, you know, late 20s, maybe early 30s. By the time Rebels rolls around. So this kid, he was a youngling or a very young Padawan when Order 66 happened.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what sort of training he has, what he's sort of had to make up as he goes, you know, being on the run and in hiding, how much of what he's going to end up training Ezra to do is based on the Jedi Code and on the Jedi Order, and what's just going to be sort of like stuff that he's figured out as he's tried to survive, you know. So that's going to be interesting to find out too.
Yeah. Yep. And then obviously the end again, where it's the Inquisitor, and I love that it's Jason Isaacs doing the voice. Because I always just think of him as the epitome of a bad guy in the movie The Patriot. It's just my initial response when we first heard about the Inquisitor is like, this is going to be stupid. Like, this is Darth Vader's job. But it would make sense that they do have something. As long as we see Darth Vader to some extent hunt down a few Jedi. Kanan, who knows how skilled he is with lightsaber. I doubt he would be much of a match for Anakin. Or excuse me, for Darth Vader, right? Mm-hmm. So that maybe that's why you need the Inquisitor too, to make it a little bit more exciting. But I don't know, like, there's just that ominous feel at the end that it just looks so good. I mean, like I said, I was not particularly excited about the show. I was just kind of like whatever about it until that trailer came out the other day. And now I'm just like today. Yeah. I'm just ecstatic about it.
So, I know.
I can't wait for October.
I know. The hunt for it's going to be so awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, what did you find most exciting about it?
The sort of sense that we got, I think most, and I sort of mentioned this earlier, but obviously the action looks great. The animation, you know, we're seeing more of it now. And it continues to look great, and the fun that it looks like it's going to have, especially like we saw with that speeder chase and everything, plus the space battles that we're getting between the Ghost and the TIE fighters. You know, it looks like there's going to be a lot of fun with this show, which is something that, while I loved the Clone Wars, I felt was missing a little bit from the Clone Wars. Was that sense of fun. So that's one thing I'm really looking forward to about Rebels. But the idea that this greater understanding of what is going on with Ezra is probably the biggest takeaway that I got. Since he is, it seems like, going to be our main character, it's nice that I have a better sense of where he's coming from and where he might be going now. So that... And we got a couple of glimpses into, you know, his past. You know, Hera says to him, you know, "Aren't your parents going to be worried about you?" And he says, "I don't have any parents."
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this kid's a street kid, he's an orphan. We kind of knew that already, but it's neat to see him express that in the trailer. And then, of course, this idea that now he's going to be learning the Force to sort of become a Jedi or something like that. You know, which, on and off, I've been sort of like tentative about that idea, but the way that it seems they're going about it, I think it looks like it'll work.
I do too. I think so too.
And it looks like, especially early on, the primary antagonist is going to be this Imperial officer.
Yeah.
I'm blanking on his name at the moment. Callus, I think. I could be wrong, though.
I thought it was Mr. Freeze. No?
No. But it looks like he's going to be the one that's sort of going to be the initial antagonist. And then we're going to graduate up to the Inquisitor. And then eventually, I hope, we'll graduate up to Vader for a couple of big scenes. But yeah. And just the whole idea that something is getting sent out. You know, Obi-Wan is having an impact even from his seclusion in Tatooine on the greater galaxy.
Yeah.
You know, that's cool.
Yes, it definitely is.
And like I said, it looks like this is just a recording that's been sent out on this holocron or whatever it is. I think it's a holocron because the way it starts coming apart and moving around is similar to what we saw in the Clone Wars. It looks like it's something that maybe Kanan had and Ezra found. And whether or not they'll travel to Tatooine to see Obi-Wan later on, that might be cool. But at least initially, it seems like this is the only real influence that Obi-Wan is going to have. But if he's recorded this holocron, they can go back to it and learn stuff from it, you know, repeatedly throughout the series. You know, this could be where they get a lot of their training to become Jedi, since Kanan was very young when Order 66 hit, and now he's going to try and train Ezra. You know, this holocron of Obi-Wan Kenobi may be where they're getting a lot of their source material. So,
right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen.
So good. So, yeah, I just love it. It does. It is like a holocron.
Yeah. And of course, it's James Arnold Taylor, and everybody who's a Star Wars fan loves James Arnold Taylor. It's hard not to love the guy.
Exactly.
So, but yeah.
Yep.
So that's exciting. It's very exciting. We wanted to address it just a little bit at least. So
yeah.
Were you going to say anything else about it?
No, I can't wait for October now. yeah. So, before we go, we didn't get a Larian inquiry for this episode, which is fine. Hopefully somebody will write one in for our next episode, but, we did get a couple new reviews on, iTunes. Isn't that right, Jason?
Yes. Yes. We got like three this past week,
which was awesome. So, thank you so much, people.
But yes. So we just wanted to read those off real quick to just sort of, get other people's words on the show besides just ours. So, and thank everybody for the nice, the very kind reviews that we got here. Do you have them up?
I do. Yeah. Our first one comes from Shogung. Says funny and entertaining. Jason Hunt does a really spot on Palpatine Sidious impersonation. I agree, Mr. Shogung. He's the best.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
And there it is. And then Balls in Play says, what a fun name.
That's your pal Brian Bailey who tweets us a lot.
Okay, nice. Thank you, Brian. But he says, Carl and Jason offer discussion topics for each podcast to create lists for the given topic, such as favorite lightsaber battles, favorite musical theme, etc. Their unique approach makes each episode timeless. I'm glad to know they're timeless.
That's awesome.
Jason, long after we're dead, people will be listening to the Wampas Lair. That's my hope.
Yes. Yes.
And then Tommy Servo, he says, this podcast has some good topics and often has some great conversations. They also have great fan polls and matchups between characters. The only thing that is a little strange is Carl's man crush on Jason. It gets a little awkward sometimes. Hey, you know what? I'm going to be me. I love you, Jason. But
yeah. This is just Carl and I. We're good friends here, and we miss each other because we only really get to see each other on a little computer screen from across the country, and we miss seeing each other in person.
Indeed. I miss you, Jason. Thank you, all three of you, for the reviews and the high remarks. We really, really appreciate it. It's glad to know that people are enjoying us as much as they are.
Yeah. I'm glad other people are enjoying the show as much as we're enjoying making it.
Yes. So, yes.
One of them mentioned our great polls and matchups, and to sort of piggyback off of that, we have a new matchup.
We do. And it was given to us by Jackson, right?
Yes. Jackson Alonzo. He mailed this in. Our matchup, inspired by Jackson, is going to be Obi-Wan Kenobi versus Kyle Katarn. So, Obi-Wan Kenobi in his prime versus the Legends Kyle Katarn. EU Legends, whatever. I mean, I'm still going to call it the EU.
Yeah. Yeah. Call it the EU because that's what it is.
Exactly. So, So, be thinking about that, folks, and we'll get that up on our social media and all that fun stuff for you to respond to. Both of these in their prime, in a neutral location, yada, yada. Same old, same old. But, Carl, if people want to respond to this matchup or submit a Larian inquiry or just include us in their Star Wars conversations, where can they do that?
On the computer, of course.
Your smartphone.
Or your smartphone. That's right. Don't forget those. But you can find us on facebook.com/wampuslairpodcast. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/wampuslair. And you can always send us an email at wampuslairpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes, indeed. And of course, you can catch us and all of the other awesome podcasts in the Star Wars Report 2nd Airborne Division at starwarsreport.com. So,
yeah, there's some good ones over there.
Oh, yes, indeed.
This is for you, Jason.
Oh, shucks.
Uh-huh. From the first time the doctor placed you in my arms. That doesn't really make sense for us, so. No.
All right.
The doctor never put you in my arms. That'd be weird.
Any final thoughts before we wrap up this show on this awkward ending?
Oh, no, I think we're good. That was fun. Really, Carl? Use your words.
That was a fun, yes. All right, well, in that case, we will close up this episode of the Wampus Lair Podcast. It's been episode number 94, My Father Before Me. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampus Lair.
You to Alderaan. There's nothing for me here now. I want to learn the ways of the Force and become a Jedi like my father.
Okay, so we've got the poll, we've got our matchup, we've got the thingies that the reviews to read.
what is that?
It's my sonic screwdriver. Here.